and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week, I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team to help me along, and I need lots of help, of course, and I've got the lovely JC. JC, welcome.
Hello, I'm like a support dog, really.
But what? So why do you get all grumpy when I stroke you then?
Well, because you back me into a corner and then I bite.
Ah, that's it, yes. And he does have a big bite, people. Anyway, there we go. More importantly, we get joined by innovators, pioneers, collaborators, leaders. And we're talking to one today. We have the wonder that is Sarah Papamichalis.
Thank you so much.
And Sarah, I think I got your surname right.
You did. I'm super impressed.
Excellent. So, Sarah, we're going to help our listeners because you have an English name, a Greek name, and a slightly South African Dutch.
Skewed accent.
And maybe some other elements of the accent. Tell us, who are you? Where are you from?
I hate the question where I'm from, but I'll try and answer that as efficiently as possible. I'm half English, half Greek, hence the schizophrenic first name with an H, Sarah, and Papamichalis with an S, which is the Greek one. I was actually born in London, English mother, Greek father, and lived in England and Greece between the ages of 1 and 18. Following that, I studied in England and France. And after 5 years in London working and a trip to New York where I realized I hate big cities, decided to move myself to Amsterdam for 2 years, which ended up being 25 years in September. So if you add all that up, you'll work out what my age is approximately and how many countries I've lived in.
24.
Love you.
Countries.
But you should go back to school.
That's been said
maths
before.
Was never a strong point.
Apparently not.
Indeed, Sarah, so, and also, listen, we've already established that we're going to have some fun today, but before we get and have too much fun, tell us a little bit about the company that you work for today and mm-hmm. what you're doing, and because it's super important to the whole decarbonisation conversation, and I love what you guys are doing, but just company, what you're doing and yeah. how you fit into that.
Yeah,
mix.
No worries. I'll probably do the inverted pyramid, which is start from the top and then go a bit more granular, because I would be very surprised if any of your listeners actually know who we are, unless they're specifically in heavy duty vehicle transportation or any kind of thing.
You'd be very surprised.
Well, good. Well, then everybody knows us? Great. Well, then
we've all heard of you. A few. Good few.
Well, good. Well, then for those who don't know us, our company name is Mylence. Comes from the idea of miles in silence, by the way, in case you would like to get inspired by how the name came to be. Nice, huh? And what we do is build EV charging stations, hubs, whatever you want to call them, for heavy-duty vehicles. And we are the first of our kind, the first company that's doing that kind of thing. And we basically are building corridors of charging stations for trucks. E-mobility trucks in particular. We started as a joint venture. So the three biggest OEMs, truck OEMs, basically decided to basically kill the chicken and egg problem, which is if we don't have truck charging, we won't be able to sell the e-trucks. Therefore, we will not be able to decarbonize, right? So that's the chicken and egg dilemma. And they put $500 million in a pot and created a joint venture, which had to go through European Commission approval, etc. So in that joint venture, we have Traton Group, which owns Scania and MAN, Daimler Truck, and Volvo Truck, which also owns Renault Truck. So a lot of the very big players decided to put their money where their mouth is and actually invest in helping this industry decarbonize overall.
So I've just been working on that. So miles of silence leads to Mylence.
Yep.
I wonder if Paul's new business should be called Curbance, where he says nothing, not a word.
It's just très difficile.
Yep. Sarah, sustainability. Why does it matter to you? Mylence clearly is going to make a huge difference to the European landscape in terms of charging. But why are you bothered?
As an individual, I chose to move to Amsterdam, as I repeat, 25 years ago, because I wanted to be able to commute by bike. And I'm aware this sounds extremely dramatic to say, but every single job I've had in the 25 years since I came here has been commutable by bike. That was basically after 5 years of London transportation. I'm quite short, which you can't see, but let me give you an example. In the summer, you get armpits at my height, and in the winter, you get sneezed on. So cut a long story short, I decided I did not want to be commuting in any public transportation anymore. So all of my jobs I've done by bike. And that means small distances, longer distances as well, but generally speaking, by bike. So for me, I guess sustainability started a very long time ago, but it was also relating to how I act as an individual, recycling at home, all of those nice, good things that almost everybody's doing. I was a vegetarian for 14 years. Won't explain why I'm not a vegetarian anymore, but basically for 14 years.
Meat, I suspect.
Well, let's just put it this way. Certain things were happening that needed to be sustained differently. But my point is that I have been through quite a few personal development areas for sustainability, but also in a lot of the companies I have been working in, sustainability has been very much at the front of that. And it doesn't get much more sustainable than the EV industry. So this is actually my second role in the EV industry. But I also worked for Uber before that. And I worked for Uber when Uber Green was just being launched. So one of the things that my team were busy dealing with and building was the Uber Green concept. How do we get more green transportation? And London, for example, was actually the first city to launch.
Wow. That's a heck of a journey. So it all started because you are relatively diminutive in stature.
Yep. You can't see it. Stumpy legs.
Well, yeah, I'm 6 foot four, so I'm one of the ones who sneezed on you.
Yes, you see, or I got your armpit. It's either or, right?
Well, I think my armpit is still way above you, but anyway.
Exactly.
And you wanted to ride your bike to work because you were just sick to death of transport. It was that bad.
It wasn't only transport. It was a way of life.
Right.
And for me, having... I always call myself one of the rat packs, right? I mean, you, if you live in London, you leave when it's dark, you go under the underground, you come out when it's dark, and at nighttime you leave the office and it's dark again. So I feel, I don't know, it was about five months of the year, I was living in the dark. And even though I may be cycling in the dark, I'm not saying that the Netherlands and Amsterdam is much, much better in terms of light. At least I'm outside being buffeted by the wind. I call it horizontal hair weather we have here sometimes. But basically being buffeted by the wind, but at least you're outside and physically moving and not enclosed in, a small space. So yes. Not that I'm telling everybody who lives in a big city they have to get out, but there is another world out there. There are other options out there for commuting.
I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah, but it kind of... Because what makes me curious, because, I mean, I've read a little bit about you from other people. And I have to say, first, let me say, I have never seen any one individual. And I've looked at a lot of LinkedIn profiles, right? I've never seen one individual with so many recommendations.
Oh, thank you.
And some of them are actually good. No.
Which ones? It paints a picture,
we'll
I think. It paints a picture.
It paints a picture that you are a people person, that you care and you are passionate and that you are a leader and that you are empathetic and you've got emotional intelligence and intelligence, you know, academic intelligence and emotional intelligence. Lots of good things. So for me, I'm just kind of like scraping away everything that's on top and saying, what's the foundation to this person? So you were born in London, you left fairly early on and went to Greece. What were those early years like that have created this person that has such universal, real appreciation for your leadership style, for what you bring, what you show up with? What's been the foundation for you?
Possibly growing up in a bicultural family helped because I had the very British English side and I had the very Greek side. So I often say that I straddle the southern and the northern cultures very easily because for me, I still get irritated by people who don't queue properly, which they do over here, by the way. But on the other hand, I get irritated by too many processes, which is probably the Greek side of things. So that cultural dynamic definitely helped me being able to navigate different things. But we moved to Greece when I was 9. And I changed 2 countries, 3 schools, and, well, obviously 2 languages in the space of 3 years. That builds resilience. That builds ability to adapt to change. That builds the ability to connect, because you have to learn how to connect each time to different people, different cultures, etc. And maybe it's useful to understand that I didn't speak a word of Greek when we moved to Greece when I was 9.
Wow.
Or maybe
wow.
I need to change that and say, I could say, I don't know, grandma, granddad, most important things, lemonade, chewing gum, and toilet. Those were the things that I knew. So consequently, when I went there, I had to learn everything from scratch. So I learned how to learn languages. I learned how to adapt. And that is why I also changed a few schools because we went to an American school to start with. So I also twang a little bit when I talk to Americans, which luckily for you, you're not. So my accent is not going to confuse you yet again. But they, you know, all of those things build up the ability to connect with people and appreciation for different cultures and the ability to adapt to change, I think.
Fantastic. It's fascinating. Did you have somebody that you really looked up to as you were growing up? You know, who was your hero? Who did you look up to? One day I want to be like that. Or was it nobody? Did you want to make your own way from an early stage?
I find that a very difficult question to answer because being an adaptable person, I pick things from different areas. So there was no one single person who was the driving, shining light. I was the first female to go to university in my family. So that was already something. But I had a lot of support from my parents in enabling me to get there. I had a big support network, basically, whilst I was growing up. And family for me is super important. In fact, to the point that when my husband and I decided to get married, he, an introvert, wanted to have 10 people at the wedding. I said, that's not really going to be possible. And he said, okay, just your family. And I was like, oops, right? So my family has been very important to me, both the English side and the Greek side. And every year I still come back to England, visit with my cousins and their children. Their children are now connected with my children and the same from the Greek side. So I would say the family dynamic, not just a single person, has been the one that I still look up to. And that is what I also, to answer some of your questions, try and bring back to the work as well. For me, this is an extended family for however long I'm in here. I'm aware there's a little bit of toxicity regarding family being your work. I read a lot. So I now call it my tribe, right? So let's call it a tribe. It's different from family, which is very close to the heart. And I always say to whoever has been in my tribe before, you're always in it. You need me in 10 years, you send a message. You need me in 5 years, 4 years, 2 years. It doesn't really matter to me. In my tribe, you're always in my tribe. And I'm seeing that now. A lot of people being made redundant, reaching out to me. And I find that a compliment rather than a burden or a chore that they are doing that. So it's a bit long-winded.
No, not at that. All. Full of information. And the key piece of information for me was that you are somebody who learns incessantly.
Yes. Yeah.
You pick things up as you go along. I read books. I went to university. Education has seemingly peppered everything that you do and you don't stop learning.
Completely.
What have you learned about you in your journey?
That's a deep question there. I would probably tie that back to what motivates me, because as you grow up, and I mean that word not as a number, like it's not 18 to 21, 21 to 30, but what, as you grow up and mature, what actually intrinsically motivates you? And some people are motivated by job titles, some by status, some by money. And I realized very early on that I really don't care. As long as I'm being paid a certain salary, I don't care what the job title is. I don't care about the span of control. I've gone from managing global organizations to being an individual contributor to manage to developing a team of 50 back down to 6. I don't care about size. It doesn't bother me. What does motivate me is learning. Mm. So I kind of consequently, every job I've had, it's been one that really pushes my boundaries, either changing industry, which you'll see I've done quite a bit, or changing scope, or both, which is even more dramatic. But that learning has actually been the fundamental red thread to everything. So to answer the question quite succinctly, what I have learned about me is that I need to add value, which is giving back, but I also need to have value added to me. And that is my innate curiosity. I always find that I get a bit itchy when I feel like I've learned enough about something, and then I'll go and say, can I do something else? Can I expand whatever capabilities that I need to expand or think that I do?
How do you make time? So you're clearly a very people-orientated person, so everybody else is important in your life. You have an important job. You have lots to do. How do you make time to learn and read and study?
On the go, a lot of it. So I have 35 minutes on the bike every morning. There's a lot going in by here. I have downloaded quite a few apps and I scroll through different apps. I've subscribed to different, at least in particular at the moment, EV learning or EV topics as well. So they come into my inbox and I scroll through them as well. Just to give you an example, when I was at Philips many jobs ago, I was head of digital innovation for male grooming, which is beards, hair, and everything else that a man may want to groom. And
clearly your
today,
target audience here.
Exactly. Well, it has to come off somehow.
Lack of hair.
But even that, right? But there I was following GQ men. I was following men's style. So whatever the topic is that I'm looking at, I will go in depth as much as possible. I've interviewed many men, chatted up many men on the aeroplane about their beard styles and how they're nothing else, by the way. But I was like, oh, look at that. You have a beard, right? So I've done a lot of in-depth knowledge gathering as I go along. I have to admit to you, I find it very difficult at the moment to read business books. I'm an avid bookworm, by the way, still. So at night when I go to bed, I read a paper book. Don't like e-readers, can't get into them. I understand that they're efficient and I understand they're more productive, but I just can't. So I read when and as I can.
It's fantastic. And I mean, I'm so desperate to get help for this and for this. and for those of you that were not listening on YouTube, that was my head, which
yes,
lacks hair,
enough.
And my beard that lacks style, lacks moisturizer. I'm not very good at grooming. I've got too much hair coming out over my neckline. I mean, it just goes on. It's terrible. So, can I arrange a personal consultation,
sure,
Sarah, at some point in the future?
Of course. Haven't been doing it for 5.5 years, so I don't know what the trends are right now. But I will definitely.
Hey, listen.
I can definitely help you with your.
I don't think I've been trendy ever. So you know, if it's 5 years ago, it'll be in better shape than it was. It's unkempt, I think
Well, maybe back to EV then. Let's bring it back to EV.
Yes, I've never felt more awkward on a podcast ever. Third wheel, I'm
you
here.
You said you were going to have fun with me. Here we go.
Here we go. But listen, let me come on to this though, because you know, Sarah, some people may say, well, you know, this is really, and I have to genuinely be honest here and go, I'm already warming to you an awful lot, you know, in the nicest possible way, in an absolutely serious and sensible way. You strike me as somebody that has incredible influence and really kind of does things, you know, very, very quickly. Your impact on a room as you walk in, I imagine, must be amazing. Now,
let me
go back. Yeah, once people spot you. But look, here's some of the things that have been said. She believed in me, coached me, and gave me the space and confidence to grow more than I ever had before. Sarah meant a lot to me. I'm truly grateful for the time I had working with her. Recommend her with all my heart. And that was just so that you know to go and say thank you to them. Wendy Peters. And then there's a guy called Finn Wilson said, Sarah creates an environment of trust and energy by truly valuing her team. She leads with warmth, clarity, and genuine care, which makes her not only respected, but deeply appreciated. I'd jump at the chance to work with her again. Somebody else said, while I worked for Sarah for nearly 3 years and was only managed by her for 6 months, within 10 minutes, I would have run through a brick wall for her. I still would. That's to your point about kind of building that network. And I've got to say, Sarah, I am deeply, honestly, genuinely deeply impressed by that kind of impact that you have on people. And I'm appreciating that for myself. I'm not sure if I would make it through a brick wall for you, but I think that you bring something to this industry that's really needed. What I've loved about the EV sector, and I don't know, I'm curious to get your view on it, but the EV sector has been a more personable, collaborative, human sector of the market in the automotive area. Automotive, I've been in for 30-something years, a long time. And my whole career has been here. And I hate to break it to you, but once you fall into the automotive sector, you can leave, but you can check out, but you can never leave. And that's the reality of it. But what is your experience of our sector? It's a sector that you're new to, relatively. I mean, Shell, you were there.
Shell Recharge. Uber,
Shell Recharge, in particular. Yes, yeah, not Shell.
Shell
in the
bought one of the company that I was at before, yeah.
Ah, there you go. I can see a principle there.
Sorry.
I'm clean and green,
I am.
How do you see our sector and what do you think is really going to move the needle? Because I think you can do it. So how are you bringing yourself to our sector, to this sector, and making the difference? What do you see?
There's actually two questions in one there. How am I bringing myself? That's okay. How am I bringing myself to the sector, and what do I see in the sector? What I see in the sector, you have to be kind of crazy to want to start. By definition, because you are changing a physically old-fashioned industry. It's been around for many, many years. So the people it attracts are the, I think you said it at the beginning, the pioneers, the innovators, the people who've never done this before, who are not afraid to take risks. So by definition, the people who kickstarted the industry had to be the dreamers and the believers. And I'm not talking about from a marketing perspective, I'm just talking about how I see them. They had to have passion, tenacity. They had to have a lot of confidence in what they were doing or believe that they could. What I think I'm bringing to the industry is a mix of having worked for a startup, scale-up, corporate, right? So in order to mature the industry, to get it to where we have scalability, which is the big, big word, we need to have governance, processes, all the things that those very innovative, passionate people are allergic to. And they're allergic because things double, triple in size within 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. How do you scale operations? How do you scale this, that, and the other? So I think that juxtaposition is what I believe I bring to the pie. Also, in my career, the red thread has always been data, technology, and people. Every job I've had is customer related in some way or form. Every job I've had has data in it. That's the red thread. Why, going back to the original part about Sarah, I like learning, and data technology constantly changes, right? It's never the same. So whilst I've tried to get excited about certain industries, I just can't. And what I've realized also is that I like to be passionate about what I'm doing, even if it's beards. But also in the EV world, it really correlates to my core values of adding value in this instance to the world, right? There's a much bigger statement here.
I mean, gosh, and that is so cool because I think, you know, we are trying to change the world. And one of the, and just as if you didn't know, There is a few areas that are more difficult than the area of truck electrification and decarbonisation. You will know, I'm sure, that in the UK here, we are suggesting that all vehicles under 26 tonnes, and of course that sort of 3.5 tonne through to 26 tonne vehicle size is one that's going to be very core to your success, right? These are the sorts of vehicles that, you know, the aforementioned Volvo, Daimler, Renault and so on, MAN and Scania and so on, those are the vehicles that are being produced. We've got a big challenge. And I want to come back to Milence because I do want people to understand the innovation that you're bringing to market. How are you guys turning up? Because it feels quite disruptive, if I'm being honest. You know, you guys are coming, you're not charging, you know, 90 cents or 80 pence per kilowatt hour. You're coming with a price that's sensible. You're coming up with well thought through, you know, charging hubs. How are you turning up? What's the mission that Milence are on?
I think it probably starts with how the JV was set up, where the mission literally is to help decarbonize Europe initially, but basically to accelerate electrification. And if we look at accelerating electrification, the next level underneath that is of road freight, right? That's the bit that we're trying to tackle. We then need to do that at scale. So there's three layers to that, right? So accelerating electrification, road freight in particular, and at scale is the next component of that. What we're trying to do is take both components in that. So you've got the fleet manager or whoever is orchestrating, I should say, maybe it's probably a better verb, the freight transportation, but also the driver. So I think the unique difference because of our attempt to accelerate electrification is that we're not just trying to gobble up money at the moment. We don't have currently a need to prove profit and loss, basically profitability yet, because we understand that in order to get to scale, we have to show up at the table with our customers and not overcharge them, not try and just create extra margin, etc. So what we're really trying to do is deliver corridors, electric truck corridors. So whereas we started with, I don't know, maybe 10 hubs last year, we're already at 23. I think 3 went live this week in Germany. We're adding more and more as we go on to make sure that we can actually create corridors for electrification. And that means every 300 or so kilometers that there will be a hub for somebody to stop at and charge. When I say electrification, that's one thing. If we put the driver back in the core of that, it means that the driver must have the facilities that can actually enable them to enjoy their stop. With electrification, you have to stop. Right, there's no right for a little bit longer than diesel refueling. So we're trying to make that stop as nice as possible for the driver by adding value there as well. So we have our amenities, the toilets, some places have showers, some places have lounges. In the lounges, some of them have microwaves because, for example, in Scandinavia, a lot of them bring their food and would like to warm it up. Not all of them do, by the way, but we're putting these in relevant locations where we have crossroads of hub meeting spots. That's basically how we're showing up, is to make sure that we're enabling that electrification and not putting blockers to it. It's already hard enough to get a fleet operator of, I don't know, 400 fleet trucks to change their mind and try, let alone us putting extra barriers to that in front of it. I do have to admit, I live in a bit of an electric bubble. All right, that's our world, is EV. Mm-hmm. We were at a trade fair a few weeks ago, and I had a lot of, you know, drivers coming up to us taking a photo of, I think it was the Mercedes eActros had just come out. So they were like taking photos of it, and I was doing selfies with them. But a lot of them, I was like, oh, you know, do you have one? No, was the answer. No, if I don't hear them. So I have to be confronted now and again with the reality that not everybody is ready to electrify. Milence is showing up to basically make sure that should they wish to do so, they can do so. Should they wish to do so with our services, they can do so, or via MSP, right? So we also work with a lot of MSPs. That is also part of our service offering.
Excellent. MSP being motorway service providers. Sarah, we don't allow
acronyms,
even if everybody knows them, and most people know what MSPs are these days.
I've been very conscious of not using many, but that slipped out. Apologies.
No, sorry. And honestly, we don't care that much. But anyway, John.
Sarah, one of the things we do allow is inclusivity and making sure that everybody has a voice, because our industry has historically not been good at making sure that we do include people. It tends to be older people like me, male, middle-aged. Well,
no hair, beards, glasses.
Yeah, like you. And what I'm fascinated by is whether you are a massive personality. You are somebody who takes no prisoners, I suspect, and that you have a viewpoint. You have principles, you have values, and they are going to get stated. Pin your ears back, people. And I wonder, have you had difficulty in your career in being heard? And if that's not a relevant question, then how do you ensure that others get a voice that need it? Because you are a champion of those who don't have the voice.
Thank you. I'll take that as a massive compliment, because that's how I also like to perceive what I do. I think everybody must have had to find their voice as they mature, right? So many times you find that how you're saying something is not making the change that you want. I can give you a concrete example. I was working for Philips at the time, and we had three apps for more or less the same function, right? Because we had three different silos of businesses. And I was trying to convince these three heads that we should have one app, because that's more customer efficient, much more customer effective. Forget the operational costs, et cetera. But it was very kingdom-y, et cetera. And my husband came home with a Xiaomi product, you know, this Chinese product. This was quite a while ago. And then he bought another one and he showed me the app, and it had all these different products in the same app. So I went, after having done PowerPoints, logic, operational effectiveness, blah, 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 blah. We happened to have an offsite, and I remember in the coffee break, I said, guys, come over here, these three heads. I said, look at this. They've done it. And that was it. They said yes. Over the coffee break, me showing them that somebody else had done something. So I think we all have to find a way to make ourselves heard. And sometimes the direct path, the logical path, which is business case, blah, 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 isn't always the right way forward. To your second point, I, as an extrovert, maybe you've guessed, am very aware, very aware of my voice. Very aware that other people are not as comfortable bringing their voice to the table. So I make myself aware of that in group settings, and I will invite the quieter voices to respond. I've done many, many trainings, including Wendy, I think, who you mentioned at the beginning, on just what's your elevator pitch? Like, but again and again and again and again, until you get it and you can say it with confidence, because sometimes how you introduce yourself is it, right? That's your calling card. I remember I had another lady in my team, and she could not interrupt everybody when they were talking, and she would be talked over a lot. So we tried different mechanics until she found the one that worked for her, and her voice alone wasn't enough. So we practiced doing this to people, and the hands worked better than the speaking because her voice was quite soft. So those are kind of things where I think coaching the individual to find a comfortable way for them to find their voice, which may be this, maybe speaking louder, maybe knocking on the table, doesn't really matter, or just practicing, is a very very good way to help each individual find their place at the table.
Do you find that women have a particularly difficult time in being heard in a man's world?
I don't.
No, so, I didn't think you would. But what about others?
Well, that's the thing, right? So I have never perceived there to be a glass ceiling for me. There is a little boys network. If you like, the higher up you go, the less women there are. I've been part of women at Uber, women at Philips, women at Shell Recharge Solutions, by the way. I've been an ambassador for women, and there are a lot of women who do feel that or perceive it. I personally have not, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist for many other women. Right. I've also been at meetings where all the guys are talking about football and I'm just contribution zero. I cannot add anything at all. So I can understand why some people feel odd. I've been invited to talks where I walk into the room and I'm the only woman, which is extremely confronting when you have to like gear up and walk in and interrupt a discussion and try and join a table where people are, right? So I can completely understand why a lot of women feel that, because you have to be strong, fierce, and resilient if you get knocked back.
Yeah, you're a role model right there.
Well, I don't know if I'm a
watch
role
and learn. Watch and learn, ladies. This is how it's done.
Okay, but I feel very humble saying that, but thank you.
But you have to. I mean, just go. I mean, if you ever doubt it, and I don't think you do in reality, you only have to read your recommendations to talk. You know, coaching, team. You know, I mean, value. You know, just that whole piece. It obviously runs through as part of your natural red thread through your life.
Yeah.
It is just something that is there, but. You've mentioned the word resilience a few times, and we've talked about this kind of building as growing as a maturing as a person. There must have been some tough times through life, you know. okay, so talk to me about that tough time, that one that kind of forged that resilience, forged this vision that you were going to help the world be better. And because that's kind of feels how that you're going about your life. You're helping the world be better. What was it? Was there a single event? Was it a number of events? Were there things that just kind of really kicked it in?
Showing my age here, I'm probably going to refer back to the beginning of animal rights. I think we're all from the same decade-ish, so you probably know what I mean. It's also the reason I became vegetarian. I just have more hair, don't worry. but I basically was reading a lot about animal rights, and I have a very, very innate core belief that we should all defend those who cannot defend themselves. And therefore, from the animal side of things to the environment to you name it, and all of those things impacted the way I perceive my position in the world, which is to try and minimize my impact on certain things. I get really irritated by plastic wrapping in supermarkets. I always carry a plastic bag in my backpack. Really small things that I can do to give back. And this even before you had to pay for your plastic bags, by the way. All of that has forged how I try and bring my passion to life. I don't think I've answered your question now, though, so I've gone off on a slight tangent there, I think.
It's that event. What's an event that you look back on in life that really forged resilience for you?
There have been many, many, so it's really difficult to pick one. There have been many times when I've been in reorganizations, which impacts me because my people are my tribe. And that, you know, the navigating the change basically has created a lot of, I would say, appreciation for stability, but also a knowledge that stability will always come. I remember when I had my first child, I had a colleague who said, Sarah, I was like, oh my God, I haven't slept and I'm still working. And he said, after every bad stage, Sarah, there comes a good phase. And I was like, oh, thank you. He said, and then it gets bad again. And then it gets good again. So that's Dutch humor for you. But I actually took that motto and I adopted it because basically it's true. After every bad phase, there is a nicer phase, and there comes stability and growth from that if you give yourself the time to reflect on what it is that there's been.
I'm interested in what success looks like for you, because whilst you've had some difficult days, and clearly there was an instant response to that question.
I don't know how personal to get.
Do you know what? We've had people cry many, many times.
Really?
Usually,
okay.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of personal stuff, to be fair. Yeah. But yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, but I'm fascinated to know what success looks like for you. How will you know that you've lived a life worth living?
I go back to my core, which is I've added value, and I'm valued, right? And it sounds extremely fluffy, but it is. And you can't see me doing it, but I'm actually rubbing my fingers to try and make it a bit more tangible for those of you just listening. It is the adding value that basically makes me tick. I've walked myself out of jobs where I felt I wasn't adding value, done in a very, you know, one of my favorite managers ever. I went up to him, I said, I think we need a work divorce. And he was like, oh, don't leave me. It was really dramatic. It was very funny. We were making jokes about it. But I said, well, I'm not adding value to your department anymore. My role here is done. So if I extrapolate that over my whole life, it is literally that, the adding value, whatever that may be, whether that be giving a hug in the morning to somebody who I see needs it. I hug.
She's a hugger. She's a hugger. Yay!
Definitely. In fact, believe it or not, I saw Wendy again yesterday. I haven't seen her since I left there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she said to me, my whole team is hugging now because of you, because I used to hug when I went into the office every morning. There you go. So it filters through. Yeah. Does that answer the question a little bit?
I've forgotten because you're a hugger.
Who does?
And that's the best news ever.
For sure. We'll have to get together physically next time.
Absolutely. Indeed. Do you know, this is one of the things we do, and it's become a bit of an Evie Cafe thing that I started hugging people because I'm autistic and that's a thing I like to do. It makes me feel safe and comfortable. And more people now come to events, and Paul and I, we hug the lives out of people, come away always with some kind of cold, flu, yuckiness, which is the downside.
That's usually when he hugs me.
And then we sneeze on short people.
Well, my introvert, slightly autistic husband who doesn't like hugging, he claims that COVID is the result of all of us huggers. And he blames me
he
for part
have
of
a
it.
Point.
Yeah,
I'm sure you don't need me to say it, but always be who you are because you are outstanding.
Thank you for that. But I mean, I've learned that being inauthentic is, it grinds. It's not natural for me at all. And I think one of the other words that's used quite frequently is I'm very authentic. And that means direct, honest, but always with positive intent. And that, I think, is one of the things that I've also learnt over time here in the Netherlands.
It's the critical ingredient, isn't it? That positive intent. Because we, you know, anybody can give feedback, you know, and unfiltered, and they can be direct, and they can be all of this sort of stuff. But it's that positive intent that is always the critical piece for me.
And has to be stated up front, in my opinion.
And to be valued and to add value, I think it's kind of why, I don't know, the corporate world has been, it's been okay to me. You know, I've built my career to this point in the corporate world. But, you know, about 4 years ago, you know, I wanted to add value. But I also wanted to be appreciated and, you know, be valued for the things that I did. And sometimes you don't always get the opportunity to do that. And that's kind of why I went to work for myself, because, you know, at least I'll value myself. No, I'm just kidding. But it's been you can serve the market where you feel you add the most value.
Yeah.
And that's been that. And I think that's what we do as the Evie Cafe, is we try and serve those people around us and the companies that work with us to elevate their messages and all of that good stuff. Anyway, sadly, listen, Sarah, I honestly, genuinely we could carry on and on and on and on and on talking here, because it's so much fun. And God willing, we will have an opportunity to be together in the future, and, you know, maybe a show or an event, you know, whatever. And we will get some time to just, enjoy each other's company, because I'm sure that will be a good thing. We have a closing tradition.
Go for it.
On the Evie Cafe. Now, it is to present you with a magic wand.
Mm.
Now, normally I would have it with me, but as you know, for anybody watching, they know that I'm not where I normally am when I do a podcast. But we do have a little magic wand on the wall at my finger here. So there we go. So I'm going to take that from off the wall. There we go. That's it. And I'm now going to pass it through to you.
There we go. And how about that?
Excellent. See, the magic works every time. That's what we love. You are now in possession of a wand that allows you one wish. And it can be for our industry. It can be for humanity itself. And we've had everything from a Michelin star chef to follow me around to world peace, to better signage, to, I mean, we've had a myriad of things. So let your imagination run wild and make one wish that will really make something better that's important to you.
Now you've made it massive, right? So I now have the paradox of choice.
I'm sorry.
As a head of product, I find it really difficult to go off and do these brainstorms where anything is possible, because I'm always looking at what the constraints are. So I'm going to add some constraints to your giving me a wish. Otherwise, I'd go for world peace number one, particularly at the moment. So if I have world peace has been done by somebody else, right? So I can tick that box off.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So then
let me go to the practicality of a problem that I am still struggling with in our industry. In our industry, legislation, that terrible thing that has to be passed, for me, is really holding us back, because there is legislation at local level, at government level, at European level, at regional level, and they sometimes conflict, and they're also bloody confusing. Sorry, are we allowed to swear on here? They're just confusing. They're very confusing. So from a product perspective, interpreting what was meant behind the legislation in order to be able to deliver the service that we have to deliver is the magic wand that I would really like to tackle. Because the problem is that every company out there interprets it differently. And what that means is, in our industry, et cetera, Mylance has decided to interpret it this way, which means that our customer journey is X, our service offering is Y. The next company along comes and interprets it in a different way. The next company comes along and interprets it in a different way. And what you see at the electric charging points is basically drivers going like this. You can't see me, but I'm swirling my head, looking for where do I pay? Where do I charge? How do I start? Right? For each and every individual, it is really confusing every time they go to a different location to have to think about how do I actually just charge, right? The basic thing that they're trying to do. So if I had a magic wand, it would be to explain to all the government officials who are typing these pieces of legislation, make it as concrete as possible as to what you want the outcome to be. And maybe that's it.
Yeah.
User-centric legislation. How about that?
Oh, there you go. And that is succinct beyond belief. User-centric legislation.
Or user outcome Fabulous. Legislation. What do you want the person to do?
Yes.
Right? Maybe that's
it. Yeah. Fantastic. John, this has been fun, hasn't it?
Oh, do you know what? I could spend an hour. I'm a lawyer by training. I could spend an hour talking to you, Sarah, about why law is the way it is and why what you think isn't possible. And I started from a position in my legal training of thinking black was black, and white was white, and law is actually grey.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we could do this for hours. Anyway, I was asked to sum up, so I shall. I feel like I have today met somebody who will change my world. And I've never said this before.
Oh.
I honestly, in the UK, we say we vibe with something. We just get positive. I vibe with you. I get who you are, what you are, and I like it. Heck, I like it. So all I can say is I had never heard of you until the invitation dropped into my inbox. I will never forget you. And
oh,
I hope that you and I will share many, many words over very, very many coffees.
Happy to
and
do so.
A few hugs as well.
I was about to say, hugs pending in Amsterdam or wherever we may cross paths.
I hope we do. I'm going to make it happen.
Please do.
You inspire. You genuinely do. And for those who are in a bit of a low and thinking, why am I doing the things I'm doing? You're doing them because you can make a difference. Sarah has proved that you can make a difference. Positive mindset, lots of hard work, bit of luck, some good people around her.
Absolutely.
You make stuff happen and I love it.
Now are the keys.
Well, do you know what? Let me, because when, so just for reference, we were going to have a conversation with Lavinia, and Lavinia's lovely, right? She is very, very articulate, incredibly passionate
amazing.
About Mylance and all that sort of stuff. And when Lavinia, and it was that conversation with her that inspired me to reach out and say, guys, you know, can we have a chat? And I was expecting Lavinia. And when Lavinia said, oh, I'm going to put Sarah through, I'm like, I've never bloomin' heard of her. Who's this woman? And I was like, oh. So I said, so I looked at the email and I thought, oh, well, she's recommended her, you know, okay. Well, then we'll take a punt. And we don't often take punts. We like to be safe and secure.
I can imagine.
Who we're talking to.
We
don't want boring people.
I can imagine.
And so, but then I did the research this morning. I thought, this person's got something about her.
Oh, yeah.
So this is going to be interesting. And then you showed up and it got even better. And it's just been a joy, honestly. But, and what this tells me is that, you know, because we're talking Mylance, a combination of money from, you know, three partners, which represents five or six different truck companies. And you would be forgiven for thinking that is just a lot of, a lot of it. I've worked for Daimler. They can be a bright pain in the Sarbanes-Oxley, and for those, it's all legislation. Sarbanes-Oxley is, you know, accounting law and all that kind of, very difficult. But it seems if you're the personification of Mylance, then we are in good shape and we are going to see truck charging come at a sensible price. And just so that you know, people out there, we didn't articulate the price here in the UK. But from memory, you will correct me if I'm wrong, it's 39.9 pence per kilowatt hour.
Yep.
And that's in the Immingham site, which is now live.
And it's flat. It's not dynamic at the moment. It doesn't change by day, by week, by time of day, etc. It's flat to give the stability back. Yeah.
Stability and certainty. And compare that to the MSPs. We're allowed to use the acronym now because we've explained it once. The motorway service providers, at something around 80 pence per kilowatt hour. Let's call it that as an average. And again, not dynamic in most cases. There are disruptors out there, and you guys are one of them. And as Mylance, and you are one of them. As Sarah Papamichalis. And what a wonderful mix. And I love it. I love everything that you've brought today. I'm loving everything that I've seen you bring through your career. And I love everything you're going to bring through your career. I've had a really, really good day.
Well, good. Thank
already.
You. And it's only
just
10 o'clock in the morning at your side.
Indeed, 10 o'clock in the morning. So, Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you both very much, John, for having me and for trusting Lavinia.
Well, she's gone up in my estimation for putting you forward as well. So there you go.
Well, there's a win-win for everybody then, right?
Everybody wins.
We said at the very top of this, Paul, we were going to do 1 hour, 59 minutes and 53 seconds, 54, 55. Outstanding.
How about that for perfection, right? You don't even have to edit.
Absolutely. But it's been great. And so we very much appreciate your time. your openness, your passion, everything that you've brought. It's going to start sounding sycophantic, so we'll shut up.
Well, I can reciprocate. I'll reciprocate. Thank you so much for both for having me and for your openness and the joy and the laughter that has happened here, right? That's what makes a podcast interesting. It's not just verbatim responding to questions, etc., but it's the human element to that as well. Thank you very much.
No, bless you.
Good. Well, that's great. And so, for everybody, there are many more podcasts as well. So we're at about 100 and something odd now. And you can enjoy all of them. Just head over to the website. You can download them on Apple and Spotify and all of those good places. You can connect with us on every Friday morning. John leads the news, which is fabulous, at 10 o'clock every morning. You can join us, Sarah. You've been on the news.
I am
not
in
you
now.
Personally, but Mylands.
Yeah,
you are the news now. But Mylands have been on the news, and we celebrate lots of great things happening. So join us for the news. Meet us at events. The next few events coming up are Fleet Mobility Live and London EV Show later on in the year. So you're welcome to meet us there. There'll be hugging. That all just leaves me to say thank you to Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you to John. And have a great day, everybody.
Thank you both.